Chat with Traders, episode 14.
The biggest secret of the best traders in the world is that they're just like everyone else. However, they've worked hard to learn the markets and discover what works and what doesn't. But how can you hear about these journeys and get in on the strategies and tactics they use? You can do it by listening to Chat with Traders. Here's your host, Aaron Fifield.
What's going on, guys? Hope you're all doing great. I've got an interesting interview lined up for you this week. But first of all, I just want to say real quick, a massive thank you to everybody who's left a rating or review in iTunes. We're almost at that 100 point in the US iTunes store, so that's really cool. iTunes is sort of like a numbers game. The more ratings and reviews that I receive, the better the show will rank and the more listeners I can reach. So thanks so much to anyone who's already left a review. Also, a big thank you to everyone who has been sending in emails with some really great feedback. And it's also really cool to hear where you guys are all sort of at with your journey. We're all in sort of various states, and it's just cool to connect. And also, get an awesome response on Twitter. So if you don't follow me on Twitter, the Twitter handle is just @chatwithtraders. And yeah, really cool to sort of engage with you guys on that sort of things as well. So let's talk a little bit about this week's guest. His involvement in trading started in his early 20s, and he's got a background in mathematics and computer programming. So it was really a natural progression that he would adapt a completely algorithmic trading approach. My friends, I would like you to meet Ilan Aizbil. Ilan joins us to discuss algorithmic trading and share some insights on a side of trading that is unfamiliar territory to many, especially in the retail space. While we spoke for close to an hour, in the scheme of things, we only just managed to scratch the surface. But all in all, I think you'll find this really interesting and enough to get you curious and maybe even excited about the possibilities of algorithmic trading. Here is this week's interview with Ilan Aizbil. Hey Ilan, how's it going?
Good, thank you, Aaron. Thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been an interesting week with all the volatility in the markets, but good, yeah.
Yeah, very cool. So thanks a lot for coming on. I mean, I know you're pretty flat out between your trading and running a hedge fund and your own companies and that sort of thing. So I'm glad you could squeeze it in. So really appreciate you coming on.
No, it's my pleasure. You're doing some good work, so I'm happy to be involved.
All right, good stuff. So we've spoken in the past and we discussed some fairly interesting topics. So that's sort of the reason why I was eager to get you on the show. And share with the listeners some of your insights. So in addition to that, I'm really keen to dig into your knowledge on automated and algorithmic trading as well. But before we do, let's start this off by giving us an overview of who you are, your background, and then lead us into how you got started trading.
I guess I started trading when I was pretty young, in my early 20s. I think I was about 23 or 24 years old. I was, you know, lucky enough to run into a little bit of money, not crazy, ridiculous money, but a little bit of money. Enough certainly, you know, to give a 23-year-old the guts to go out and mess around on the markets. And I did that for quite a few years, actually, on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. And I built some of my own little tools and gadgets. You know, because my background is actually in computer science and mathematics out of university. And so I used that knowledge to program a few of my own tools to trade. And then, one thing led to another, and I guess my life diverged in two different paths. One is continuing to trade. Another is running a company that sells certain trading software. That's pretty much how my life has been since my early 20s is running a company as well as trading on my own book.
Okay, so what would you say initially sort of sparked your interest in trading?
I guess I have to say greed. I mean, you know, like any young guy who's got a lot of zest in him and thinks he can take on the world. I think that was a big factor in it. And knowing what I know now about the markets, I'm not sure whether I would have chosen the same path. I'm glad I did, but certainly it's been intellectually very challenging in all respects. So, you know, I think it's a lot of the youthful energy that got me into it, and a bit of greed, I guess.
Yeah, right. So I guess that probably led into your what you called your gambling stage when you first sort of got started. So what were some of your early experiences?
It's interesting. You know, people talk about a gambling stage. I don't really classify myself as, or I never did classify myself as a gambler. I think I was always pretty analytical about the markets. I certainly did learn my lessons from a financial perspective, yeah. But I didn't do too badly. I approached the market in a, you know, using my mathematics and statistical kind of background and looking at the numbers rather than simply, you know, trading according to my gut feel. So I guess my learning lesson could have been much worse. But I am pretty analytical.
I'm really keen to get into that side of your trading. I'm really eager to get into that. But before we do, what sort of markets are you predominantly sort of trading in at the moment?
Right. So I was predominantly trading the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. That's obviously, as you can hear by my accent, I'm originally from Johannesburg, South Africa. Now I live in the US, and I trade now predominantly foreign currencies. I have lost touch a little bit with the South African stock market, not living in the country anymore. And to be honest with you, I've only been in the US for about 2.5 years, and I find the markets here a little bit overwhelming. I think in South Africa there was, you know, 20 or 40 stocks that were liquid enough to trade. In the US there's thousands of stocks which are liquid enough to trade. And so I think any trader taking on the stock market in the US has a big job ahead of him. You know, just to have the computational power, certainly the way I look at the markets, you know, to have the computational power to find the opportunities, the good opportunities in the market. I mean, it's an enormous task, and I haven't wrapped my mind around it as yet completely. I've kind of set myself a 5-year goal that within 5 years, that means in kind of 2.5 years or so, I'll start trading U.S. markets, but I'm guessing that it'll only be in the form of, you know, trading ETFs or, you know, some type of index derivatives, and not actually the underlying stocks. That's kind of where my thinking is right now. But in general, right now my exposure is primarily in foreign currencies.
Okay, sure. So what is it that sort of really attracts you to foreign currencies?
I guess there's a number of things that do. I think firstly, the margin levels are very attractive. So for a person that's analytical in the market like me and is able to write systems which are emotionless, it's quite attractive to have those high margin levels, obviously, because you can get a lot of exposure on the market with putting less capital down. I think many people burn themselves because, obviously, you know, getting more exposure is obviously also giving you more risk. So if you're trading, you know, manually, then I think you're prone to making those kind of errors and letting your emotions take hold of you. But I guess I suffer from that to a lesser degree because of the way, you know, I trade through an automated fashion. So that's one thing, I guess, is the margin level. Obviously, the next thing is obviously the extremely cost-effective way of trading. I mean, the margins in the FX space are extremely, the spread is extremely low, and you can, you know, certainly at the level that I'm trading, it's not small, but certainly even at the amount of capital I'm trading, you can get in and out of the market pretty much at any time. There's almost always a counterparty to the trades. So I think that those two things really, really fit in with my style of trading.
Okay, that's great. How much of your trading is systematic or algorithmic versus discretionary screen trading?
I would say my personal book that I actually trade is almost 100% algorithmic. In fact, not almost, it is 100% algorithmic. I do certain manual trades, actually not on my own book, but, you know, in in the company, in my company, where, you know, we have foreign currency income, and so, you know, I have to hedge certain positions against fluctuations in foreign currency, obviously, because in a business, it's not about making money, but rather preserving cash flow. So I do trade a little bit manually, but it's more kind of longer term, 3 month hedging positions, rather than speculative trade. But all my speculative trades are algorithmic.
Okay, that makes sense. So what do you believe are some of the key pros and cons of both approaches?
Between algorithmic trading and manual trading, is that right, Aaron?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, a big pro, obviously, for algo trading is the fact that emotions don't get in the way, right? I think that's the big, that's one of the big pros. I guess one of the major cons for me is it takes a long time to see, I guess, a return on the work that you've done. If you sit in front of a trading terminal and just push buy and sell, you're immediately making money or losing money. So you're in the market, you're active, right? So you're there immediately. Whereas in automated trading, the investment comes up front. So you do less thinking while you're actually trading, but you make an absolutely huge investment up front, right? So you're talking about months and potentially years of time invested before you even see a cent, you know, before you're even opening trades on the market. You know, mostly it's sitting behind backtesting engines and, you know, things like that, and before you place a single dollar on the market. So in that sense, it is pretty frustrating, you know, and even taking a new algo and a new strategy to market really takes a long time. You know, if you think about taking all the time that you've spent manually trading and evaluating when to exit, when to enter, if you take all that time and literally shift to the front of your trading process, you know, that's how much time you need to invest in building your strategies. And then of course, the, you know, many people have a, you know, kind of a incorrect perception about algorithmic trading, and they think that you know you build something and you're done, then you go sit on the beach in the Bahamas, right, counting the money. But in fact, that's not true, because any knowledgeable trader will tell you that market conditions change, and no strategy, you know, will work for more than 3 to 6 months at best, maybe a year at best, certainly in kind of highly volatile markets like the FX market. So you know, you're continuously working, except it's not real time while you're trading, right? I mean, it's not within the trading process, it's outside of the trading process. So it's a different type of investment in time. And I guess I'm not sure if that's a pro or a con, but you end up in the algorithmic trading world. There's always work to be done, even if there's no trades to be taken, because the markets maybe aren't open, or the market, there's low volatility in the markets when you should have be kind of avoiding trading. You know, there's always work to be done. There's always new strategies to think about, new indicators, new statistical methods to try and add into your strategies. There's, you know, so you can literally roll out of bed and do work and then roll back into bed, you know. So it takes a lot of discipline to run a, you know, in an algo trading environment. I think it's quite difficult to run a well-balanced lifestyle, you know, if you've got kids or family or, you know, whatever it is, because there's always an excuse to go and work.
Yeah, I think you put that really well. That's great. So you touched on something interesting there, which I was going to bring up. And, you often hear people say the problem with algorithms and systems is they work well in certain market conditions or for a limited amount of time, and then they become out of sync with the markets. So how do you deal with this? Like, what's your experiences around this?
My experience is that I almost never trade a single type of strategy at any one time. Firstly, I like to be in multiple instruments. You'll never find me trading one instrument or two instruments. I'm always in five or six different instruments, because I think although some instruments are highly correlated, I think it's, you know, there's a higher chance of being in different market modes when you're in different instruments, right? So I think that's the one way that I circumvent the problem that you're talking about. The second way is that I trade multiple strategies. So if you look at my basket of strategies, I have some mean reversion strategies, trend following strategies. I have only one, I would call a statistical arbitrage system, but I'm not really into that because I'm not really into high frequency trading, like high frequency, like thousands of trades a minute. You know, I'm not into that kind of stuff. I am obviously an intraday trader, but I think to do real statistical arbitrage, you need to be in and out of the market pretty quickly, and that's not really where I am. I guess it's not my style. But I'm running, you know, trend following and mean reversion systems simultaneously and across multiple instruments.
Okay, so do you just want to expand a little bit on what you mean by mean reversion there?
It's described as an instrument always going back to some type of middle ground. So let's say it's really the theory of saying that something, I guess in layman's terms, people call it overbought and oversold, right? So if you think of a share going, or any financial instrument going to an overbought state and then up to an down to an oversold state, so overbought, oversold, and so that's what we call mean reversion, where it's kind of bouncing between these two extremes. So that's what we call the mean, right? The mean is somewhere in the middle, right? So it goes up too much, then it comes back down. I think in kind of simple terms, if I put in simple terms, maybe, you know, some of the mean reversion indicators more commonly found in the kind of the simpler trading consoles are like an RSI or a stochastic, right? Where the indicator is basically telling you, you know, you've gone up too much, it's time to come down again, or you've gone down too much, it's time to go up again. So that's what I mean by mean reversion.
Okay, cool. So do things like news have any sort of impact on how your systems or algorithms operate, or are they strictly just focusing on the price?
So news is, in my mind, quite a contentious issue. The first thing I have to say is that I find, obviously, you know, dealing with a lot of retail customers in my trading business, in my software business, I hear a lot of people saying, you know, avoid trading the news. But if you actually take the calendar of news events and actually, you know, plot them on your graph to see where they actually happen, you know, I'm pretty confident to say that it's almost impossible not to trade news. You're consistently trading news, whether it's low impact news or high impact news. There's always something happening in the markets, and so, you know, people ask, do you avoid trading news or do you trade the news? You know, what I normally do is I try avoid trading the very high impact news events. So I would trade through normal news events, assuming that they're normal market conditions, and then through like very high impact events I would avoid. Like, for example, a few weeks ago, you know, Yellen was speaking, or, you know, something like that, something that would, where I know definitively it would significantly move the market, I normally kind of push the big red button, get out the market, and see where it goes. I'm not a gambler. I don't really want to place a red or black kind of a bet. So I trade news, not specifically news events, but I trade through the news as if it's like normal market conditions. But I avoid the very, very high impactful events.
Okay, that's great. That's really cool. So do you do any back testing on your algorithms and systems? Because I've heard it's often tough to back test these effectively. So how do you manage that?
Yes, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that many people struggle with effective or with accurate back testing. I don't really want to advertise any companies or any software specifically in this talk. I don't think that's the purpose of this talk. But I think certainly if we're talking about retail traders, you know, they're really using retail quality software, you know, out there. Certainly in the FX market and some of the equities platforms I've seen as well. The kind of software that retail traders use is not used by professionals to backtest. Professional traders use backtesting engines that are event-driven, that are portfolio that can do portfolio backtesting, that can actually simulate real spreads in the market for certain times of day, and so I think that people say that it's difficult to effectively backtest. I think have a limited view of the kind of high end software that's available. So if you're prepared to spend $5,000 a month on a piece of software like I do, then you certainly can backtest very effectively. You know, if you're getting a backtesting engine for free from your Forex broker, then you know you get what you pay for, right? You get something which is mediocre and can only test a limited amount. So, you know, I've seen some scary stuff in my life. You know, I've seen some retail traders, you know, take equity curves, put them in Excel, you know, and then try combine equity curves and seeing, like, you know, how well the system has performed. Whereas an equity curve is actually meaningless. You know, professional traders look at mark-to-market curves, right? So they can see what their real drawdowns are throughout the history of their system. So not only when they actually kind of open or close the trade, but actually throughout the lifespan of the open trades, open positions. So I think you need a different level of software. I think you need a lot of data. You know, you can backtest easily on, you know, 1 hourly data or 30-minute data, but when you're really doing serious backtesting, you know, when you're ready to launch already, right, not kind of broad testing, but when you're really doing the final kind of QA on your systems, you know, you're backtesting on 1 minute data or even tick data. I personally don't really backtest on tick data. I don't think it's necessary, but I know guys that do backtest on tick data. So I think it depends on who you're speaking to, you know, that'll tell you how effectively you can. I mean, I guess it's not perfect, you know, to backtest, but I think you can get 95% of the way there. You know, at the end of the day, you have to put your money down and run the thing forward, you know. And when it stops performing, you know, you have to push the big red button and say stop. Right, and relook at things, and hopefully by then you've got some more strategies in your pocket that you can go ahead and deploy to replace an older model that's not working that well anymore.
Okay, great. So recently, I believe machine learning has been a big thing in the markets. Do you apply this at all to your trading, or what are your views on this?
Yeah, it's actually interesting that you asked that. You know, I have quite a bit of academic knowledge in machine learning, a little bit of practical experience. I wouldn't say I'm an expert, but I know enough, you know, to understand what people are saying and to have a meaningful conversation about it. My view is that of machine learning in general, and please, you know, this is just my personal view, is that I feel uncomfortable with a model in which you put something in and you get something out and you don't actually understand what's going on in the middle. I have applied machine learning concepts, but using traditional statistical methods. So what you'll find is that a lot of machine learning tools, like multi-layer perceptrons, are really just classification tools, right? And there are other ways of doing classification tools, you know, from very simple k-means clustering all the way through to, you know, high-end clustering. I'm not against it. I just feel a little bit uncomfortable with them, and I prefer to use the equivalent statistical methods to achieve pretty much the same thing. But then at least I understand the input, I understand the processing part of it, and I understand the output, you know, which is more than what machine learning gives me, which is just an input and an output and some unknown stuff in the middle.
Right. So that's really good. So just broadly speaking right now, how would you say the industry has changed over the last 10 years as a result of the technology? Like, what's the sort of impact that you've felt yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly there's a lot of companies out there that are still doing, you know, a lot of price arb. And I'm not at that level. You know, certainly I don't claim to be, and I don't think I will ever be. These are, you know, multi-billion dollar funds that that can invest millions of dollars into infrastructure, you know, next to the exchanges. I'm not at that level. I think those have been the primary drivers of the large swings in the market. But I think that certainly those kind of companies that are investing these massive amounts of money in these low latency trading environments actually help. They help in increasing volume. They help in reducing costs for the brokers because they're seeing a lot more volume. I think in general, you know, the more volume you see on a market, the better for everyone, because at the end of the day, you need a counterparty to your trades, right? Whether you're trading OTC FX, you know, Forex, and the counterparty is your broker, or your broker takes your trade and takes it all the way up to an ECN or up to a, you know, bank liquidity provider. At the end of the day, there has to be a counterparty to your trade, right? And so, I think the more volume there is, the better for everyone, because the spreads reduced, the costs reduced, the entries and exits in and out of the market are almost instantaneous and at the price you expect them to be, which is a huge thing. You know, if you think about your backtesting question earlier, you know, how do you, you know, one of the difficulties in backtesting exchange traded markets is like you can easily say, you know, I'm going to buy 1,000 Apple shares, but what if at that time there wasn't 1,000 Apple shares to sell, you know, no one was selling it. So, you know, when you talk about, you know, these guys that are doing high frequency trading and pushing a lot of volume through the markets, you know, they're almost guaranteeing a small or kind of, I guess, relatively professional guys like myself, they're almost guaranteeing us a counterparty. And I think it's making trading a lot easier and a lot more accessible for everybody. So I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Something else I wanted to bring up, and because you're so involved in the space of algorithmic trading, do you feel there are certain things that your average retail trader is just really in the dark about? Like things which perhaps impact their day-to-day trading that they're just oblivious to?
Well, you know, I guess the answer to this question is actually maybe driven by my exposure to retail customers through my software business. I think... in general, I see a few characteristics of retail traders. Firstly, they're lazy. They don't want to apply themselves. They don't want to apply the time. I mean, you're applying the time in an interesting way, which is, you know, talking to traders and finding out what works for them, what doesn't work for them. But I see so many people, you know, not trying to understand the markets, just going in there blind and trading. So I think the first thing is laziness, which is a huge problem for retail investors. I think the second thing that I see is actually more fundamental than actual trading technique. I think people don't understand the game. It's almost make the analogy like someone inviting you to a game of Texas Hold'em, right? But you actually don't know whether three of a kind is better than a royal flush, right? it comes down to people actually not understanding the rules, not understanding the game. You know, I see people trading FX that don't understand what margin means, right? They don't understand what a pip is and how much a pip is worth to them. You know, you can ask them a simple question, you know, like if a price of euro dollar goes up by 5 pips, you know, how much is that worth to you? Like they wouldn't be able to answer that question. And you know, and I think if retail traders actually just, you know, spent the time understanding, but really understanding, I'm not talking about, you know, sitting through some online video where you're, you know, checking your emails, you know, while you're watching the training video. I'm talking about really applying yourself with a piece of paper and a pen and make sure you understand all the concepts. You know, I think that would be an absolutely huge step forward for most retail traders. And the second thing I think people don't spend enough time doing is actually understanding the dynamics of the market. You know, I see people trading, you know, I mean, I'm specifically talking about Forex here, but I see traders trading, you know, euro dollar in the afternoon in the US. You know, no one trades euro dollar in the afternoon in the US. There's no volatility. You know, people trade it during the London session or very early in the morning in the US, you know, New York time. It's, you know, again, it just shows the ignorance of people going into a game where they actually don't understand the rules and the strategy around like certain basic principles. So I think that people really do need to try and understand. They need to, if they're not trading FX, if they're trading futures, or they're trading, let's say futures, for example, you need to know what a futures closeout means, right? You need to understand what impact that has on you. You can't just trade a futures closeout day the way you would normally trade, you know, a future during any normal day. And similarly with stocks, you have to understand, you know, the seasonality of the stocks. When are retail stocks moving a lot, you know, during Christmas time and, you know, shopping periods. And so there's a lot of interesting dynamics that people, you know, just completely ignore, and I think that's very, very important. And I guess that's, you know, I guess makes me think about coming back to the question why Forex at this stage is, you know, is because I find it manageable. You know, the five or six pairs that I focus on, I understand how they move. I understand the dynamics. I understand the seasonality. I understand, you know, the high impact events. I understand all the stuff around the instrument before I actually go and, you know, start building strategies and trading the instrument. You know, I just try and get understanding of the beast that I'm actually dealing with.
Mm. Yeah, that's really good, Alan. So thanks for, you know, really expanding on that point. This kind of brings me to another interesting topic while we're talking about, you know, retail traders in particular, and something we've spoken about in the past a little bit and you've got some strong views on, and that's education. So what do you believe are the main flaws in, you know, some of the education and the material that gets taught to new traders?
Well, I think there's different levels of education, right? So education, like, you know, what does it mean when something moves a basis point? What is the word margin mean? What is a stop loss? What is a take profit? You know, what is a trailing stop? That is one level of education. That is what we call, you know, what I would call kind of fundamental market education, right? Just understanding the terminology and the basic concepts. And then, yeah, I do have strong views about people that go out and tell you that they're gurus. You know, I hear so many people at dinner parties, you know, people ask me, oh, I heard this guy talking on CNBC. He sounded like he knew what he was doing and he's so knowledgeable. I say to those people, you know, man, if that's what you want to listen to, you can listen to, but that guy's a talking head, you know. And similarly, many educators, you know, are not real traders. I think there are certain educators that are real traders, that really actually do trade the market and have their own book. You know, when I say their own book, not a written book, I mean like their own book, like their own funds that they trade, right? But there are many, you know, people out there that are selling education to traders that is going to make them into millionaires. And it's, you know, it's, and people just go there with false hope, right? Hoping that they learn some kind of secret in the market. I can tell you right now that if someone had the secret sauce in the market, they would not be selling you, a trading course telling you how to trade the market, right? They'd be trading it themselves. That's how, you know, prop shops work. You know, proprietary trading shops, they have a group of traders who know what they're doing. They're out there trading. They're out pounding the markets. They're not out there selling, you know, educational tools, you know, wasting their time talking to traders, because every hour they spend talking to traders and educating someone, they're losing out on backtesting. So, you know, I hate to sound like, you know, doom and gloom, but you know, I am pretty skeptical. I mean, I know how much time that I've invested in and into building algos and building strategies. And you know, Aaron, even, you know, before this conversation, I said to you, whatever you do, don't ask me about what my strategy is, because I'm not going to tell you, right? So, in the same way, you know, you can't expect, I mean, you know, you can't expect someone who knows a good strategy to go out and just tell it to you, you know, for free, you know, for $100, you know, whatever the course costs you. So, you know, so certainly I hold that kind of stuff very close to my chest, and I expect most professional traders, real professional traders, also do. They keep it very, very close to themselves.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So in that case, how should someone who is new avoid the fluff and the nonsense and really equip themselves with a solid knowledge base for their trading career?
It's actually a really, really interesting question, and I kind of have a, I'm not sure if it's a different view, but I do have a view on what you're saying. I firstly, I think that before you even get into trading, you need to make a commitment to learn how to trade, right? If you're not going to firstly make that commitment to actually say, I'm going to understand the markets, I'm going to understand the terminology, I'm going to understand how things are priced, I'm going to understand the news events, I'm going to understand the seasonality, the volatility, I'm actually going to understand. If you are too lazy to do that, then you should not even be pursuing any kind of career path in the markets, because then what you should do is you just take your $10,000 or $100,000, whatever it is that you're trading, and place it with an asset manager or someone who can actually trade. So that's I think the first thing. And I think, you know, from what I've seen in retail traders, I think 90% of people who like to think they're traders should actually, you know, just, you know, take it on the chin, walk away and say, you know what, I'm actually not prepared to put in the time because I have, you know, a wife, two babies at home, and, I can't spend more than an hour a day trading or learning the market. So you need to be realistic and walk away when it's not for you. If, however, you've made the commitment and you've taken that step to say, you know what, I'm actually going to commit the next few years of my life to actually learning and to understanding, I think the first step, the first step before you place a trade is to understand the dynamics, to understand how things move, to understand, you know, which instrument moves at what time of day, to understand what, from a macroeconomic perspective, what are the drivers of that instrument, right? If you're trading REITs, you know, then you need to look at interest rates, right? If you're trading FX, then you need to look at, you know, also interest rate, money flow, a whole bunch of other stuff. You know, you need to try and understand, you know, what are the drivers that are macroeconomic drivers that are influencing the instruments that you're actually going to trade. Once you've got your head around that, and it's never an answer, right? But you have to understand, you know, the game. Then you can start looking at actually trying to figure out what I would call like the cyclicality of the instrument you're trading. You know, does it go, you know, simply put, does it go up five candles and down five candles and up five candles and down five candles? You know, is there any kind of cycles that you can see in the market, right? Are there, you know, how is the market moving? Segment the market by hour of day. You know, many people look at the market in this kind of continuous line. but actually, you know, let's just talk about FX for now. I almost completely discount anything that's out of the London time session. For me, it's almost irrelevant what instrument does outside of the London time session, because I know the entire movement of most Forex pairs happens during London, right? So I focus on the dynamics during London. If I pollute my mind and look at what euro dollar does, you know, at the afternoon of the US of New York time, you know, then I'll see like little slow upward movements, and I think, oh wow, it's going to be great to trade euro dollar in a trend following manner, you know, but actually that's complete rubbish, right? because when it's really moving, it's not moving in a straight line, right? It's moving up and down and up and down. So, you know, maybe I'm kind of giving you how I think about things, but I think about things in a big picture, you know, macroeconomic, political, you know, then I move down into, you know, what are the drivers, you know, then I move even deeper into what is the cyclicality, when does the action actually happen on this instrument, and then I start building ideas around that, you know, oh, I can see that there's always, you know, a few ups and then a few downs, or, you know, there's this kind of pattern, or, you know, whatever it is. Then I start formulating in my mind, you know, the possibilities, and I write them down. Many people don't write stuff down. You wouldn't believe that. Then I write things down, and I say, this is what I observed. I look at the same time yesterday, the same time before that, I start putting some ideas together to actually find some pattern, something that I'm going to exploit in the market, right? And then I start thinking about how to actually build a model around that. And that, I think, for me, is like the last step. The last step is actually building the model. So much, you know, research has to go into it.
For people who are, you know, sort of in that retail space right now, let's say they've got an interest in algorithmic trading and systematic trading. Is that something they should be considering?
They can consider it. I mean, most people don't have the ability to program, but I think there's a lot of programs out there that'll program your idea for you. But I think the problem that people face is the fact that they're not willing to spend money on it, right? They're actually not willing to learn lessons, because if you come up with a model, then the reason why you're getting it automated is so that you can actually test whether the model works over a certain period of time, right? And people say like, oh, I had this idea for a model, and then I gave it to a programmer and it didn't work. What a waste of money. I can't believe I just spent like $2,000 or $3,000 developing this model. Now I'm so upset. I'm not going to build a model ever again. I don't want to waste money. I say the opposite to people. I say, well, thank goodness that you spent your $2,000-$3,000 building that model, because now you've just saved yourself tens of thousands of dollars of losses, you know, in the market, right? Trading that stuff manually, you know. So I have a different view. I think that everyone should be automating their trading. Even if you decide to execute it manually, you should be going out and spending a few thousand dollars getting a programmer to develop it, backtest it for you, and showing you that either the thing, yes, it's feasible, it works, which is great, go ahead and trade the thing, or no, it doesn't work, you know, it's rubbish. In which case, you should be delighted that all you did was, you know, pay some school fees, right, to actually learn your lesson. So, you know, in an ideal world, I think every retail trader should actually have a programmer buddy that actually, you know, that they can communicate and say, hey, I want to test when, you know, this moving average crosses that moving average, you know, what happens, you know, and, you know, try it out, you know, even if it's not detailed backtesting, just in general, whether there's even a, you know, a vague possibility that there's an opportunity to make money using that strategy. So I think it's very accessible. I mean, you can go to all these well-known websites. I don't know, Freelancer, Odesk, all these different websites that have got outsourced programming. You know, find yourself a programmer, spend the money, spend a few hundred dollars or a few thousand dollars, you know, to prove yourself wrong that your model doesn't work before you go and lose your cash on the market and get really despondent and walk away. You know, set yourself a budget. You know, if you have $100,000 to spend or to invest in the market, you know, you need to be able to budget, you know, $5,000 to $10,000. You know, to get your model right, you know, in hard cash, because then you'll get the payout in the long term. So I think everyone should be getting into at least testing their ideas in an automated fashion. You know, you might decide to execute manually, but you know, you have to test.
Yeah, that's a really good perspective. What were some of the things that you first started automating?
Yeah, I first started automating what you read in every technical analysis textbook out there, you know, which is like moving averages, RSIs, MACD, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, I won't tell you what my formula is, but I can tell you that all that stuff is rubbish. You know, it works for a bit, doesn't work for a bit. It's, you know, it all really depends on what parameter you put into them. You know, if you want a reason to go long, you can put a 200 bar moving average. If you want a reason to go short, you take the same price graph and put a 5-candle moving average, you'll get a short signal. You know, so in terms of, you know, technical indicators, I think traditional technical indicators, I have found them to be, yeah, I mean, it is a bit extreme for me to say they're rubbish, but yeah, pretty much, I don't trade any of that stuff. I just think people are lying to themselves, unless you're prepared to re-optimize, you know, every day, every few days, to try and get the parameters to fit exactly the market conditions that you're in. You know, so if you're prepared to do that, you know, in terms of optimization, then that's fine. But if you're planning to say, oh, a 15 or a 14 candle RSI works for me, then I think you're lying to yourself. And that's what I kind of, the hard lessons that I learned in, you know, initially in my career is almost having to pay to disprove that these technical indicators, you know, certainly even in the medium term or definitely not long term, don't offer, or they offer very, very little value. So yeah, that's how I started.
Okay, no, that's really interesting. That's excellent. Well, this has been really cool. I mean, we've touched on a lot of subjects that I have sort of never really brought up in previous interviews. So before we let you go, do you want to share with listeners where they can perhaps learn more about you and connect?
Sure. You can just Google my name on LinkedIn. You can connect, and I'm always around. I'm happy to chat. I'll never give you the secret sauce, but I'm always happy to chat. just Google me on LinkedIn, and I think that's the best way.
Well, this has been really good, so thanks a lot for coming on, and we will touch base soon.
Thank you, Aaron. Thanks for the time.
You've come to the end of this episode of Chat with Traders, but don't worry, more great episodes are on the way. To stay updated with each great new episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we'd love it if you leave us a rating and review. We'll see you next time on Chat with Traders.